Welcome to the Psychology World podcast with me, Connor Whiteley, psychology student and international best-selling psychology author of over 30 psychology books, bringing you the latest psychology news, fascinating psychology topics and more each week. If you want to learn more, then please check out connorwhiteley.net/books. And don't forget to like and subscribe to the YouTube video or follow on your favourite podcast app. And here's the show. Hi everyone and welcome to episode 248 of the Psychology World podcast with me, Connor Whiteley. And today's episode is on: should you be a military psychologist? And it is Saturday the 13th of January 2024 as I record this. So I thought today's episode would be a rather fun one, because January is sort of the time of year when everyone starts thinking about their plans for the future, their plans for the year, maybe a career change, and so many other really quiet career related things. So I thought, right, I've had this on my to write list for ages, so I thought, right, let's actually do this, let's get on with it, and maybe some of you will enjoy this, because being a military psychologist, it sounds really good, and there are some brilliant benefits. Like, some of these benefits I think are actually quite amazing, but I wouldn't do this personally, but I know that this would be right up the street for quite a lot of psychologists. So this is just something to think about, and I actually come back to that at the end of today's episode, because even if you think you don't want this, it's still good to learn about it, because it's another option in case your current career doesn't pan out or you think you want to change. So, great stuff coming up in the content part of today's episode. So, we're moving on to the psychology news section. We're reading from the British Psychological Society Research Digest. And the first one is rather good: gaze of others warps time perceptions. Our perceptions of the passage of time can be distorted by our internal states. For example, sitting through a movie you hate can make it feel like it's a crawling by. This, however, is far from the only thing that can shift how quickly we perceive time to be moving. A China-based team recently reported a striking new finding in the film of time perception. If we see another person gazing at an object and are then shown that object for a set period of our time, our viewing seems shorter than it otherwise would. Or, as authors Yanghu Yu at Chinese Academy of Science and their colleagues put it, unquote, time flies faster when observers are confronted by objects that fell under another's gaze, close quote. Okay, so I'm not going to read any more of the article, and to be honest, I am not a cognitive psychology person, so I'm sure the cognitive people that are listening to these podcasts can probably figure out why, but I think that's really weird, and I can't even begin to imagine why that would be the case. But again, though, that's a nice thing about research, because it always leads us to where I'd be like questioning my common like knowledge base, and we get to expand it. Now, the only thing that I would say is that this is a striking new finding, which means that this hasn't been done before, which never, ever, ever a bad thing, and I always like really new findings. But because this is a bit of an odd sounding finding, and to be honest, we should always be looking to replicate and just like a double check findings like anyway, hopefully someone in the future will replicate this just to see, like, is this a fluke? Or is this a true finding, or as true as the scientific truth allows us to find? An interesting one. Really weird. And the next one is: laughter and love boost each other in romantic relationships. A good sense of humour vaguely scores highly on at least of the most desired traits in a romantic partner. But whilst there's plenty of research exploring why we find funny people appealing and how humour might help on a first date, there's been relatively little research into the role of humour in established relationships. Some are couples who are funny, more satisfied with each other, or are satisfied couples more able to see the funny side in their partners. So I will just read one paragraph from the BPS's write-up. The main findings held for both men and women, and it didn't relate to the length of the relationship. Overall, they fit with the theory that humour functions as a tool for relationship maintenance, signalling a continued interest in the other person. Open a quote. Our results were consistent with conceptualizations of humour as an indicator of a continued compatibility or a lack of a conflict. Close quote, the team writes. And I think that this is something that we can all understand, though, because I'm also going to say that this applies to, like, friendships, because I have no romantic experience to, like, draw on here. And I feel that these findings are relatively, like, common sense, but it's always good to have research, like, and nail it down, because if we like people, if we like spending time with them, actually being, like, with them, then they're going to make us laugh, we're going to enjoy it. And who doesn't like being around someone who actually, like, makes them laugh? Well, because if you're around someone that's funny and someone that you like, then you're going to feel good. You're going to feel good. All of those happy neurotransmitters are going to be released, and it's going to benefit your relationship and your mental health too. So the takeaway from this psychology news section is make yourself and make other people laugh. And the final one is elsewhere on the web. Open a quote. A study of 500,000 medical records links viruses to Alzheimer's again and again. Close a quote. Reports Felicity V. Nelson for Scientific Alert. In her article, she details a recent study published in Neuron, which adds to existing literature suggesting links between viral infection and dementia. Though the study design can't demonstrate a causal link, it does, open quote, support the idea that viral infections and related inflammation in the nervous system may be common and possibly avoidable risk factors for these types of disorders, close a quote, according to the study's co-author, Andrew Singleton. So because there's not a great amount of, like, information and, like, given in that one paragraph, I can't say too much. However, in, like, 2023, we did cover quite a lot about dementia on the podcast because of my own, like, a family. And I do think that part of the joy I see in inverted commas about clinical psychology and just mental health and just physical health in general is that, rather annoyingly, is that there is no one single factor when it comes to these conditions. So yes, we know that Alzheimer's and other stuff is caused by these proteins that build up in the blood and the brain, but we don't know what causes the proteins that to actually form. And there's tons of different research, which I detail out in my book, Dementia Psychology. But there doesn't seem to be any major reason for the development of these proteins. So yes, we now know that that inflammation and these viral infections can be a risk factor for Alzheimer's, but how does this fit in with the other risk factors? And more importantly, can we somehow create some sort of, like, holistic way to try to minimise Alzheimer's altogether? Now that would be an interesting challenge. So I hope you enjoy the psychology news section. So let's move on to the personal update. So we're moving on to the personal update. So there's actually not a lot to tell you and actually share with you about this week because I've just been preparing like university. I've not done any more statistics revision. I've been meaning to, but I just haven't. Next week, I'm hoping to update ConnorWhiteley.net with some of the statistics information because the statistics information there is... it's definitely not basic. It's definitely university level, but I've not touched that since my second year. It's about 3 years now. And of course, I've been doing all of this statistics revision. I've created quite a lot of like new content that I actually want to add to that webpage though, because it's really helpful for me, but it's also going to be really helpful for all of you if any of you have your statistics questions. So that's been the main thing like this week, and then my ethics application has also been like submitted for my full scale study and a whole bunch of other psychology related stuff. But this week's just been really nice. I've been like talking to a lot of friends, preparing to go back to university, which I think is going to be a bit of a culture shock because I've really enjoyed having like the month off and etc. And I've been putting together a Kickstarter. So if you like science fiction, fantasy and mystery fiction, then on a Tuesday, so the day after this podcast like comes out, definitely head on over to Kickstarter.com and find the Kickstarter, the Connor Whiteley Starter Kick, a Make 100 Kickstarter, because that contains a lot of great fiction. And as always, I always love to hear your thoughts and feelings on today's episode. So you can always email me, ConnorWhiteley@ConnorWhiteley.net. You can always leave a comment at the show notes at ConnorWhiteley.net/podcast. And you can always tweet me on Twitter at SciFiWhiteley. I always love to hear from all of you because it really helps make the podcast feel more like a conversation. And you can also leave a comment on the Facebook post at ConnorWhiteley Psychology Offer. And today's episode has been sponsored by Careers in Psychology, a guide to careers in clinical psychology, forensic psychology, business psychology, and more. So the reason why this is the sponsor for today's episode is that I know a lot of like university psychology students and even some psychology professionals, depending on the area that they work in, they aren't really sure about the other areas in psychology that is actually like available to them. Because to be honest, in my experience, lots of people think psychology is only clinical psychology, but it's not. As much as I love clinical psychology, your psychology degree actually gives you so many other options to actually explore and enjoy. Yeah, for example, like the book talks about working in forensic psychology, business psychology, academia, experimental psychology, and so many other great areas for which are a lot of fun. And the reason why this book's really popular is because this book goes into quite a lot of depth about the various career options. For example, like what is it actually in the over? What are the pros and cons, and how do you actually get into it? And this does talk about qualifications at times. So, okay, then. So it's a packed full of really easy to understand information. And as always, it's always written in my engaging tone. So, but that is Careers in Psychology, a guide to careers in clinical psychology, forensic psychology, business psychology, and more. Available at all major ebook retailers, and you can get the paperback and the hardback version from Amazon, your local bookstore or local library if you request it. And whilst buying books helps to support the creation and the editing of the podcast, my time is sponsored by my wonderful patrons. And as always, a massive thank you to my patrons, because your support shows that you like the show and that you want it to continue. So if you wanted to become a patron of the show and to get tons of great rewards, now you can at patreon.com/thepsychologyworldpodcast. So that's the personal update. Let's move on to the content part of today's episode. So we're moving on to the content part of today's episode. So we're going to be talking about, should you be a military psychologist? So this is a really useful, really fun, and really interesting podcast episode. So let's dive into it. What is a military psychologist? Before we move on to the advantages and disadvantages of being a military psychologist, we first need to know what one is and what they actually do. Therefore, simply put, a military psychologist is a psychologist who works in the military to support soldiers and other active personnel in relation to a wide range of tasks. For example, give them psychological treatment for mental health conditions, providing counselling and other support the soldier might need, as well as performing psychological assessments on people. What are the advantages of being a military psychologist? So now we'll talk about the three main benefits of being a military psychologist. What are the training and professional opportunities of being a military psychologist? Whilst I do have to admit that being a military psychologist is probably the last thing I would ever want to do, whilst the job really isn't of interest to me in the slightest, I know being a military psychologist would be a great job for some people, and it's always useful to know about different psychology professions, hence why I'm covering the topic today. Firstly, being a military psychologist might be a good job for you because they offer a lot of great benefits to their employees. For example, military psychologist trainees are paid a full salary, which certainly makes it unique because normally trainees get a lot less money than fully qualified professionals. As well as military psychologists get to have the same wages as well as other benefits that other military officers have that have the same rank as them. That I think is very interesting and could be a great benefit. In addition, once you're a psychologist in the military, you can apply for a wide range of postdoctoral fellowships across a wide range of subdisciplines like clinical psychology, forensic psychology, health, operational psychology, and so on. Also, military psychologists get to take advantage of the military's leadership development courses. All of these opportunities come with a full-time salary for the psychologist, which is brilliant, considering the often rubbish pay that psychologists can face early on in their careers. And something that I think is a rather brilliant about being a military psychologist is that if you don't work in the military, you tend to have to self-fund your continued professional development. But this normally isn't the case in the military. And yes, I know the NHS and other organisations do tend to have a fund to help pay for CPD. But as I learned my learning disability work experience, that fund is limited, and you can only use the money for something directly related to your job. Anyway, in the military, command funds your participation in conferences, training, professional organisations, and board certification, since the military recognises that their psychologists are a critical part of their significant decisions, so it's important that they provide support to military psychologists so they're well qualified. Why being a military psychologist is rewarding work. Another benefit of being a military psychologist is that the work is both rewarding and challenging. Since all militaries require their workers to be challenged by their resilience, professional expertise, adaptability, and their physical abilities. this is important to note because psychologists are very important to the military, but psychologists are also leaders, team players, and officers in the military. Therefore, these skills are even more important than they normally would be in civilian settings, due to the military will require you to put together clinical presentations, lead other service members, and the decisions you make will have consequences for both the service members themselves and the military's mission, whatever it is. As a result, a military psychologist's personal and professional skills are constantly being tested, and this means that the military provides a near endless number of development programs. So if you want access to that sort of training, then it may be being a military psychologist is for you. What is the pay and benefit for military psychologists? So whilst I admit this next bit is very much US centric, I still think that it's a useful one for everyone to be aware of. As a result, in the USA, the salary for military psychologists have improved a lot over the past 15 years. So military psychologists are now some of the highest paid psychologists in the United States. In addition, US military psychologists get access to other benefits as well. For instance, they get free healthcare, flexible sick leave, housing allowance, a pension, loan forgiveness, tax benefits, and generous annual leave, as well as something called the GI Bill, which I have heard of because it's mentioned quite a lot on US TV programs like NCIS, but it's very US-centric, so I wasn't going to look it up, and I'm still not. Finally, military psychologists in the US specifically get an ascension bonus, a retention bonus, incentive pay, and board certification pay. In other words, there are a lot of great benefits and a great salary for being a military psychologist. What are the disadvantages of being a military psychologist? Why is being a military psychologist stressful for families? This is definitely one of the reasons why I won't be a military psychologist, since it is true that the military has made some gains, making military life easier for families. It is still true that there will never be an optimal situation for a family, since the thing I really don't like about working in the military is that parents and spouses are away from home on a regular basis. This means that they miss out on their children growing up, they miss key family events, and just being a part of a normal family unit. This has a lot of negative outcomes for families because this creates employment challenges for spouses because of the mobile lifestyle, as well as this creates parenting challenges, relationship challenges, and other problems for families. Of course, I'm not saying that having a family member working in the military is all bad, because there are some advantages. Like, it would be nicer to live in another country. There are plenty of health benefits that normal Americans just don't have access to. Parents that can raise informed and flexible children, and so on. So there are some good benefits to travelling and working with the military. But these benefits just might not be enough to offset the negatives. Personally, if I was with someone who worked in the military, I would seriously need to think about if I could follow my partner around the world. Because sure, I can write, podcast, and learn psychology from anywhere. Yet, I like routine because of my autism. I like some level of certainty, and I would like to see my partner without wondering when they'll be back from a posting. Why military psychologists have a lack of control. This also might be the biggest reason why I wouldn't become a military psychologist, because the military isn't for you if you want a 9-to-5 job in a geographical location that you live in. Since, as I mentioned in the point above, the military moves a lot, so you might be deployed and then redeployed depending on what the military needs. As well as, just like the rest of the military, military psychologists are not so special that they don't have to wear a uniform, exercise a lot, meet the military's fitness and health requirements, do drug tests, and on and on and on. Military psychologists still have to do all of those things. Personally, I do not see moving constantly and not settling down in one location for a period of time to be fun. Mainly, that's just autism, and honestly, I like exercise, but not because I have to do it. I also really hate uniforms, orders, and I just don't like the work culture of the military. So no, being a military psychologist really isn't for me. Why you can't be a specialist in military psychology. Now, this next disadvantage I think is like high treason or heresy for me, because I really do hate this one. Since if you want to be a military psychologist, then you need to be a generalist within clinical psychology or psychology as a whole, and you have to have a lot of knowledge about everything to oversimplify. You absolutely cannot be an expert in one area and that's it, because you will have to be able to do whatever the mission requires. Of course, there are some military psychologists that are specialists, but after you finish training as a military psychologist, you probably will not be used full time in that speciality. You will almost certainly be required to step out of that area for long periods of that time if the military mission needs you in other places. For me, this disadvantage is basically heretical, because I love that word, like, for starters, and I'm a studying psychologist, so I can work with specific groups of clinical populations in specific ways. I want to be able to use systemic approaches and cognitive behavioural approaches. They are the ways of working that I love, and there are certain clinical populations that I would love to work with, because I think it'd be a lot of fun and I find them inspiring. So I hate the idea of having to step away from populations and methods that I love. Of course, I'm not deluded. I know in an NHS job or another psychology job, I would still have to step away and use different approaches from time to time. But my point still remains, the basic job is still a specialist within reason, unlike the military psychologist job where you are a generalist. Conclusion. So I think we can all tell by the end of this podcast episode that being a military psychologist is not for me. Yet it might be for you, because a military psychologist does have a lot of great benefits in terms of travel, salary and benefits that a lot of normal citizens just don't get, especially in the US, where they don't have a free healthcare. Yet there are a lot of disadvantages too, like being the generalist, the constant moving and the uncertainty about where you'll be next. However, the entire point of these Careers in Psychology podcast episodes is that we are all learning what we can do with our degrees. Some of you might be thinking, that sounds like a cool job, but I don't want it. And that's perfectly okay. That's actually my own reaction. But you might be thinking, oh wow, this job sounds great. Thank you, Connor, for telling me about it. That's okay too. You now have the information about being a military psychologist, and you can decide what you want to do with it. And that's why I like these psychology career-related episodes, because they get me thinking, me learning, and asking myself, what do I want in my life? And I hope that these episodes inspire you to question yourself, your career choice, and where you want to be in the future. So I really hope that you enjoyed today's episode and you got something out of it. Like I've said before, these episodes are a lot of fun. I love the podcast, but I really do love career-related episodes, because I'm just trying to think about what I want for my future. And if I can find something else that's even more interesting, then that's just great. And as I'm learning, I want to be sharing all of my knowledge with all of you. So I hope that you got something out of it. If you know someone who enjoyed today's episode, then please share it with them. I'm always really grateful when you wonderful people help spread the word about the podcast. And if you want to learn more, definitely check out Careers in Psychology, a guide to careers in clinical psychology, forensic psychology, business psychology and more. Available in all the usual places and at selected audiobook retailers. You can also get the AI narrated version. Now, places like Spotify, Kobo, Barnes & Noble and a few different library systems too. And if you want to become a patron of the show, then you can now at patreon.com/thepsychologyworldpodcast. So have a great day, everyone, and I'll see you next time. Thanks for listening today. I hope you found it helpful. Please remember to like the video and subscribe to the YouTube channel and follow the podcast on your favourite podcast app. And if you wanted to learn more, then please check out the backlist of the podcast episodes or my books at conwhiteley.net. So have a great day and I'll see you next time.